Hey guys, this is Jim from Caligula's Horse, and you're listening to the 9-8 Podcast. Yes.
Welcome back to the 9-8 Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us another week here on the home of everything prog in the Southern Hemisphere. My name is David Ellis, and with me every fortnight, as always, like clockwork, is the wonderful, fantastic, and jealousy-inducing Alex Hogg. How are you, Alex?
I'm all right. How are you, Dave?
Not too bad. Not too bad. You sound a little flat. Is everything all right? Or
yeah, these last couple of weeks have been pretty busy for me with work and stuff. That's why we are. If you want someone to blame for our new fortnightly recording schedule, direct that blame all towards me. It's all my fault.
That's all right. I'm sure they were blaming you anyway. No, I think I don't think anyone's got a problem with the new recording schedule. And if you do have a problem with the new recording schedule, by all means, please tell us. It will probably fall on deaf ears because there's nothing we really can do about it Yes, indeed. But the last couple of weeks have been a pretty big couple of weeks in the scene of prog. Mostly, honestly, this is a bit personal, but mostly due to one particular announcement. Carnival gonna be dropping a new album and starting to tour again with the Unify Festival, I believe it is. It's happening in January, so I suppose.
January next year.
Yeah, and it's happening in Gippsland, Victoria. It happens every year, and they've normally got some pretty big guys. Mates of mine in Polaris played there, I think, last year from memory. But the actual lineup this year is pretty good. Under Oath is playing, In Heart's Wake, and obviously Carnival as well, which you've just mentioned. Crossfaith, who I will mention a little later on in the episode, Dream on Dreamer, The Plot in You, In Harm's Way, Wax, Citizen, Turnstile, Thornhill, and Pagan, just to name a few that we have seen throughout this way. Now, obviously some other big things have happened in the last fortnight, one of which you guys heard a little bit of a teaser to in that little intro there. I actually managed to catch up exclusively with Jim from Caligula's Horse the other night when they played in Sydney, and you'll hear that interview in full a little bit later on in the podcast. What else has been happening? What has been happening on the other side of Australia that you've noticed there, Hoggy?
Well, I did see, this is coming from the Prog Report, that King Crimson will be releasing another live album. Ooh. This is not, as I teased last week, last time, the Live in Poznan 2018. This one is from Mexico City 2017. So Ooh. Last year they played a show. They actually did 5 shows in Mexico City. And so they have cobbled those together, picked up the best of the best, and this will be a 3-CD Blu-ray set.
Yeah, wow.
So they're playing – this covers the first show that they've done with the current lineup, with Jeremy Stacey on drums and Bill Rieflin on the keyboards.
Yeah, wow.
So
it should be
good. Looking forward to that one.
There's been a few people that have been doing stuff in Mexico City in the last few years. I know Roger Waters did some stuff there, and there's been some other reasonably prolific artists that have been doing stuff in and around as well. Mexico City seems to be a hot point.
I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, it's very, very cheap to record there. This is a similar reason why a lot of bands who want to play with the orchestra end up doing that in Plovdiv in Bulgaria. The orchestra is very cheap, or cheaper than most orchestras to hire to rehearse and record. The second one, which of course is that the Mexican fans, they seem to have a real affinity with music, and they respond very passionately to it, much like European fans as well, particularly Italians.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Lots of hand waving, undoubtedly. Yes,
exactly. So I think that's the reason why, bands like to record in Mexico City. It's a good place for them to be.
Mm. And I've also heard Haken releasing a new album, or they've announced they're recording one or something.
Yes, they're currently in the studio at the moment recording their new album.
Yeah.
This one will be due for release on October the 26th this year.
Oh, wow, that's soon.
That's really soon. They've released, there will be a limited edition 2-CD digipack and a vinyl version as well. And the track listing has been released in this as well.
Ah.
7 songs. So I'm assuming we're going to get some pretty long ones in there as well.
I'd hope so. Mm. I also saw a particularly interesting thing about a week ago now. Something to do with scientists have created some new model to identify Lennon's Beatles songs from McCartney's.
Oh boy, just what the world needs, another way to prognosticate about the Beatles. Because it's all been done to death.
Oh, absolutely.
I honestly think there is literally nothing left to explain about the Beatles. It's all been done.
I tend to agree with you.
Yeah. Everybody has prognosticated over all the conversations that they ever had to within probably one or two words of what they actually said, I reckon.
Yeah, more than likely. Mm. This particular thing was a senior lecturer from Harvard and another guy from Dalhousie Uni. I assume I'm saying that right. Dalhousie. I mean, it's Dalhousie.
Sounds about
Dalhousie,
right.
You know? They've created a computer model which breaks Beatles songs down into 149 different components, and they claim it will be able to identify the writer of each contested Beatles song.
We're going to need to pause the podcast for a second. I've rolled my eyes so hard they have now fallen out of my head. As I said, like the world needs another method to prognosticate about the Beatles.
I know. It's weird. It's very weird. There is a really, really interesting thing at the bottom of this, which we've touched on before. At the bottom of this article, it says, the rule of thumb, if the song is tasteless, like Maxwell's Silver Hammer or Pastiche, Obladi Oblada, then it's probably Paul McCartney's. And if it has no middle eight section, like Come Together or Across the Universe, then it's probably Lennon's. And if it's got both, then keep on rowing about it.
Yeah, exactly. Then the arguments can continue about who wrote what with who. And I know particularly certainly bigger Beatle fans than I am, always pissed at Paul McCartney because apparently he's quite the revisionist. I wouldn't have any sort of opinion on that because I don't follow what he has to say about who wrote what, when, and how closely. But that's just what I've been told by people who do follow those things, that he is somewhat of a revisionist. And I guess he can be, because the only other person to argue with him is dead.
Yeah, well, that's true.
That sort of stops all the arguments, really.
Indeed. Pushing up strawberry fields. I don't know. I mean, the Beatles were such and are such a cultural powerhouse. I don't know if you saw the car karaoke thing.
Paul McCartney. Yeah.
That was a phenomenal. I actually hate that show. I can't stand that segment of that guy's show. Actually, I don't even like that guy. I actually find him aggravating.
Mm-hmm.
But that was phenomenal.
I know exactly what you mean.
Watching McCartney and taking a trip down Penny Lane and all that sort of stuff, and it's really cool. I just thought it was. I really enjoyed that episode. But that's just me being a very big Paul McCartney fan. So. One other thing that did catch my eye so far as news was concerned, or newsy stuff was concerned, was a very, very funny notice that was taken looks like it was taken a few years ago from the quality of the cell phone image. here on this image that I've got, and it says polite notice is hanging in a pub somewhere. I'm not quite sure, but when leaving the premises, please remind our neighbours that drunk people have been loudly leaving this establishment long before they decided to buy houses next door to it.
That could be pretty much anywhere in the world. New York, London, you know.
The carpet looks distinctly British, so I'm going to say it was probably a British or an Irish pub somewhere. But it goes back to what we were talking about a little while ago, where these people go into places and they buy a house next to this pub, and then they start complaining because it's too noisy. It's like, well, yeah. Mate, it's been there 150 years. What's wrong with you, you know?
Yeah, if you're going to move into a known night spot area and then you want to complain about the noise, it's like, oh, come on, yeah. Fuck off, man.
Exactly, exactly. And it appears on a slightly more egotistical note, we've got a listener in Switzerland. Did you see that on the metrics in the background?
Yes, I did.
I don't like the sound of that. That sounds like it's something like I've just hit a nerve or struck a nerve or something, or you know something I don't. So.
Yeah, this is actually my mate's girlfriend who complained mercilessly when I said about Jack White and the one White Stripes song.
Well, they've only got one. What do they want, you know?
Damn it, Dave, you are not helping.
I'm sorry, fan / friend's girlfriend from Switzerland. Don't get me wrong, it's a great, in actual fact, it was on the telly tonight. I went and visited my folks for dinner this evening, and they were watching The Block because Mum's a Block tragic and I hate the show.
God.
But they were watching it, and it was on. And Dad was like, "Oh, that's a good song. What song's that?" It's like the white. It's
Seven the White Stripes, Seven Nation Army. Seven Nation Army.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds like a new one. Nah, it's been around for a while. It's
yeah. What is that? Like late '90s?
No. I want to say mid-2000s because I remember it coming out when
2003. You were right.
There you go. I was going to say I remember it. I kind of remember it coming out when I was living in West Oz, so I remember it around that time. But I can't remember if it came out. And realistically, it was a bit of an interesting change because at that time you had a lot of new metal and things like that. I mean, Linkin Park were massive, Limp Bizkit were massive, Korn, all those sorts of guys. And then this album, the White Stripes, came out and it went massive.
Yeah, this was kind of in that era as well where guitar solos weren't really a thing. Yeah, everyone was sort of going away from guitar solos because they thought it was like dated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That and all that sort of thing. So when this one came out, it was sort of like, you know, whoa, you know, they're back.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah.
Which is really, and this is the thing. And I'm not a fan of Jack White. You've seen the movie It Might Get Loud, right?
Don't think so.
It's The Edge, Jack White, and Jimmy Page in a room talking about music for 2 hours. It's awesome. It's really, really good. And Jack White is such an egotistical. Oh man, I can't stand the guy. In the thing, and he goes into the room, and he says, you know, what's going to happen? Or probably a fist fight. You know, I'm going to make them teach me everything that I know that they know, and da, 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 all this sort of stuff. And then there's this absolutely amazing scene where Paige is talking about coming up with songs for Zeppelin. And he picks up his guitar because they've got all their gear and all their rigs there and everything like that. And he picks up his guitar and starts playing the intro to Whole Lotta Love. And the Edge sort of moves forward on his seat, sort of watching him. And Jack White's sitting there and he's got his guitar sort of the headstock tucked up under his chin and he's sort of leaning on it. And he sort of has this little smile and then he looks down and it's one of those moments where you just know that he's going, yeah, okay, cool. It's okay. You know, like,
man. The guy seriously thought he could outgun Jimmy Page?
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, Jimmy Page is not, and I'm going to get some angry emails for this one, I guarantee you. Jimmy Page is not that great of a guitarist, right? Like, he did some he did some phenomenal stuff. He's revolutionary. I don't disagree that he, you know, started genres and he was a great guitarist maybe in his day. But, I mean, he's not – he's a bit sloppy. You know, you hear any live recordings –
People said the same thing about David Gilmour. Like, you know, snobs tend to go about David Gilmour. It's like, oh, you know, he's not playing in tune half the time. You know, the tune, the guitar's out of tune half the time.
Yeah, well, with the amount of bending that he does, I mean, that guy does like four semi-octave or five semi-octave bends. I mean, for semi-octave, semitone bends. I mean, that's you ever tried to do that? Like, do you, have you got any idea how much your fingers bleed at that point? Like,
And when you're bending the string that far, it's not going to stay in tune. It's going to go.
Especially not in a Strat in that era.
Yeah, exactly. Things I mean, just, if you listen, you similarly, if you listen to Jimi Hendrix live recordings, with all the bending and stuff that he was doing, you could hear him at the end of the song say, you know, say to the crowd, sort of, hang on, man, I got to tune up. And he sort of sits there and tunes up for a little bit, gets everything back in tune again, and then into the next song.
There's a fantastic, fantastic story that McCartney tells at his concerts. And basically it's about when they release Sgt. Pepper's, and here we are again talking about Sgt. Pepper's. when they released Sgt. Pepper's, it was released on, for example, a Friday or something like that, and Hendrix was playing a show on the Sunday, right? So they went to see him. The Beatles went to see Hendrix, right, in a small club in Liverpool or something like that, as it was. And he opened with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. He and his band learnt the whole thing in 2 days and opened with it in the way that only Jimi Hendrix in a drug-infused haze could. And, you know, big dive bombs on the whammy bar and all that sort of stuff, which in the late 1960s or mid-1960s, mid to late 1960s, if you did that on a Strat in that era, you touch the tremolo, you look at the tremolo from a mid to late 1960s Strat, and they go out of tune, right? So this thing's out of it, right? And he says, you know, he gets to the end of the thing, the song, he's done this massive dive, whoop, whoop, whoop kind of thing, you know, and he's out of tune, and he's looking at the crowd and looking at the Beatles, who are sitting, like standing in front of the stage, and they know he's out of tune, and he knows he's out of tune. So he goes to the microphone and says, hey, so I'm really out of tune here. I need someone to tune my – is Eric here? And he was looking for Eric Clapton to tune his guitar for him. And Eric was there. So it led to the very strange thing of Eric Clapton on stage with Jimi Hendrix tuning his guitar while the Beatles looked on.
Damn.
Imagine being in that room.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, I love that story. I think it was a really, really cool one.
That is a great story.
Have you got anything you want to follow up on from the last jealousy-inducing episode?
No, not particularly.
Cool. Well, if there's nothing I suppose to talk about, we should get on to the main event here this week, which we were going to talk a lot about some cool prog bands that maybe aren't from the Western side of the world.
Yes. So I've discussed this before on the podcast, but my fiance, being Bulgarian, has introduced me to several really, really good Bulgarian prog bands over the years.
That's good.
The first one that I'm going to call out at the moment is a band called FSB. Mm-hmm. Now, these guys have been around since the 70s. They were brought together by sort of record executives and put together with Bulgarian poets. So the Bulgarian poets would write the lyrics and these guys would put music to it. And for a while there, it was very difficult to get records in the post-communist era because the record label sort of passed off into private hands and they didn't really have money to keep pressing the records. So a lot of the records ended up out of print. Luckily, in literally the last year or two, all of this stuff is now available on the internet.
Hey, that's good.
In Spotify and also from their website, which is sort of like a Bandcamp type setup. So throughout the week, I've been listening to their latest album, which is actually recorded 8 years ago, the self-titled FSB album. And the first song on this album, the one I'm going to call out to for people to go and listen to, is a song called Catch. That's the English translation. The album that I have has the English lyrics translated in the back, but as you might expect when you're trying to translate poetry, it doesn't really work. So the lyrics that for this particular album have been written by two contributors to the album. Half the album is written by Daniela Kuzmanova, and the other half of the album is written by Jivka Chapova, and two prominent Bulgarian poets that have contributed lyrics to this album. And from my reading of the English translations of their lyrics, there's a lot of sort of mysticism and a lot of sort of thinking about spiritual type things towards this album. The big hit that they had within Bulgaria, which is probably from the 80s, was a song called Visoko Visoko, which loosely translates to higher, higher. Obviously, when you're translating poetry from various things, it doesn't quite work. But no. you get the general idea.
Yeah, I mean, this song High that you're talking about, I know there's a lot of repeating high, the word high in there, which I assume from what I know about poetry, at least Western poetry, and I don't know much about Eastern poetry, but from what I know about Western poetry, you generally don't repeat the same word more than two or three times. You know, maybe these are different terms for it, and things get a little bit lost in translation. So
yes, as well, and of course, what you're looking at, the word high is visoko, so it's sort of visoko, visoko, visoko. So it's sort of being sung in a sort of way.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll put a link to this particular song in the show notes for people who can have listened to it.
Yeah, it sounds good.
And
yeah.
I'll put a link to. The guitarist in this band, Ivan Lechev, is, I think, a fantastic guitar player. There's a lot of, in the record, the latest albums, a lot of big guitar solos, sort of Gilmour-esque type guitar solos. And I've had the great pleasure, actually, of seeing this particular band when they played their 40th anniversary concert last year.
Wow, okay. It's not often you get to... see a band that's been around for 40 years.
Yes, the only other bands that I've seen have been around for 40 years are Rush and the Rolling Stones.
Yes, well, Rolling Stones have not been around for 40 years. We know that. We know for a fact that Mick Jagger and Keith Richards did appear. The first recordings of them were about 4 million BC.
I think they feature on some cave paintings in France.
I'm pretty sure somewhere, yeah. Neolithic versions of rock and roll.
So the reason that I labeled it, I mean, there's a lot of sort of pop influence with these guys, with some of the song constructions.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I think of these guys as being particularly progressive is the mixing of Eastern instruments and Western instruments. The Bulgarian folklore and the music surrounded with Bulgarian folklore is particularly based around bagpipes.
Oh, right, okay.
So there's several songs that contain bagpipes and choral sections as well. I actually have a funny story about Bulgarian bagpipe music. I was walking around with my fiance in Bulgaria. We came across an old Bulgarian bagpipe grandmaster who has been playing. This guy was in his 80s or something. And so we stood there and watched him play for about 20 minutes. And he heard us speaking in English and asked my fiancé where I was from. And when he found out I was Australian, he said he was going to compose a song for me right there and then.
Yeah, wow.
Turned his bagpipes around and started to play them like a didgeridoo.
Right.
Sounded very nice. And then... through my missus to translate, he said that he was going to call this new song "Where Did All Those White Bastards Come From?"
which I thought was particularly amusing at the time. And, you know, very interesting that a Bulgarian grandmaster bagpipe player would be familiar with the struggles of the Aboriginal people to be recognised in their own homeland.
Well, exactly.
FSB are quite influential in the Bulgarian music scene. There's a lot of bands who name check these guys as an influence. Mm-hmm. And another band, Small Man. Now, I sent you a track to listen to from Small Man.
Yes.
A couple of days ago, a track called Evolution.
Yes.
What did you think?
I really liked it. I'm a big fan of listening to lyrics in songs, particularly when they're quite heavy hitting and they are very poignant, particularly when they hit home at a particular time of my life and so on and so forth. So not being able to sort of understand the lyrics quite well was a bit of a downside for me. But beyond that, I actually really, really liked the songs themselves. They kind of sounded like an Eastern Bloc Tool.
I was just about to say that there was definitely a sort of a Tool-like element to their music.
Mm. Mm. And I really enjoyed it. Really cool stuff. I haven't listened to a whole bunch of stuff by them, but definitely.
There isn't a whole much out there to listen to, really. They only have, because Small Man, this is not their full-time profession. This is a side project, essentially, for them. Yeah. All of them have actual jobs. Mm-hmm. And so they don't get to release a lot of material. Mm-hmm. They've been around since 2006. They have four albums, all of which are of a similar length to the first one, sort of half a dozen songs, almost sort of EP length in a way.
Yeah, right.
I would definitely recommend this band to people to go and have a listen. The other band from this region of the world is a post-rock band called Kahara.
Oh.
And these guys are from, and I have to get this right because I will get angry emails about this one. These guys are from Northern Macedonia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have to get that right now because very recently, for those of you not aware, there was a very recent name change to that country.
Yes.
And you can't call them Macedonia anymore.
Yes.
It's Northern Macedonia.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys, I mean, if anyone out there is a particularly big post-rock fan, and if you've managed to sit through us talking about Tangled Thoughts of Leaving and Sleep Makes Waves for the last couple of weeks, then you will probably enjoy this record as well. Mm. So I will put a link to their Bandcamp page in the show notes. Mm. So that is Kahara. There Were Heroes Amongst Us.
I actually really like them. Not stuff I could listen to all the time, but definitely cool stuff. Definitely cool stuff.
The next band that I was going to mention is a band that I got to see and we spoke about in the last episode, Riverside. We were going to bring this up in the news section, but because we're doing this whole section of talking about Eastern and Central European bands, we were going to bring it up now. So Riverside have released a single from their forthcoming album, Wasteland.
Ooh, I haven't heard it yet.
You haven't heard it yet?
No. I really shouldn't I?
Yes, you should. You really should. Okay, so the new single is called Veil of Tears. Their album is due out in September. I'm eagerly looking forward to that one to see what they've come up with.
Definitely. If it's anything like the other Riverside stuff that I've heard, it sounds like it'll be pretty damn awesome.
Yep.
Awesome. I think there is one particular band I'd like to bring up if I can.
By all means.
Only because I discovered these guys sort of reasonably recently, and they have a reasonably new album out as well. In actual fact, their first album, debut album. This is Derek Sherinian's side project, Robots Against Entropy.
Ooh. Cool name.
Robots Against Entropy. The vast majority of the people that are in the actual band are from the Ukraine, but Derek Sherinian is on keyboards there for, I think, only one track. And it is cool, man. It is real cool. You can obviously find them, you know, in the usual places. But they released an album, their first album, the self-titled Robots Against Entropy album, on June the 10th, I believe it was. The tracks aren't super duper long. I think the total runtime for 9 tracks is about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, somewhere around there. So sort of normal sort of length. But definitely cool, definitely worth a listen.
Yeah, so we'll put a link to that in the show notes for people who want to check that out.
Paranoid Mind are another one. They released an album reasonably recently too, on the 28th of June, called Ascendance. These guys are from Poland. Again, about a 40-minute album from memory, with about 10, 12 tracks, somewhere around there. Some really, really cool stuff. Very, very cool stuff. We'll put a link to this one in the show notes as well. I believe they have a Bandcamp page where you can have a listen to just about everything.
They also have a YouTube channel as well, which I'm just about to pull up their song called Weakness.
Yes, Weakness is one of the stronger ones, honestly, on the album. And you can see that they sort of take a bit of influence from some of the earlier prog stuff and meld it quite well with some of the more rocky elements in the band, particularly in that track.
Yeah. A lot of piano stuff, a lot of keyboard-driven music in this one.
Absolutely.
Not exactly unsurprising for a country that names its airports after famous composers.
Mm-hmm. Now, one band that I think we would be completely amiss to ignore is a band that I've recommended 2 weeks in a row now for people to listen to, and that is the band. The band is called Sunchild. These guys are also from the Ukraine. A lot of really cool stuff coming out of the Ukraine at the moment. And the album was called Messages from a Father, Division and Illusion of Time, and you should definitely go and listen to it, like, right now on Spotify or whatever streaming services you want to use. Hoggy, I know I recommended this for you last week. What did you think?
I really enjoyed this album. There's a lot of good stuff on this, you know, a lot of progressive, a lot of technical things that have, you know, stuff that I really enjoy when I listen to music.
For me,
the opening track, Searching Diamonds, was the pick for me. Really like that one.
And interestingly, a very similar theme to another album we're going to talk about in just a few minutes for our album review this week. But this album, Messages from Afar, Division and Illusion of Time, super good. A bit of a hark back to the sort of heyday of prog, I will say, you know, 60s, 70s sort of prog rock kind of stuff, but definitely with modern recording techniques and modern modern themes, and just a little bit more technical than stuff was around in the 60s and 70s, unless they were on acid. but this is definitely worth a listen to anyone. I know I've plugged it like 3 weeks in a row now, but this is, it's very quickly becoming one of my favorite albums. And it is such a great album to listen to.
I really enjoyed this album. Definitely one I'll be coming back to time and time again. And when we get to the end of the year and we put together our sort of top five of the year, this one will definitely be up there.
I think so. I think it's in a really good contender. That being said, the tail end of this year is looking like it's going to be hell good for prog. With the announcements it seems everyone is just releasing an album. The only one that's obviously still a big question mark is the new Tool album.
That one will be a big question mark for the rest of the decade, frankly. I'd be very surprised if we see that before 2020.
I don't know. I've a sneaking suspicion. I reckon they're just going to release it. Not even do like a big campaign or anything like that. I reckon they're just going to drop it.
Sort of like, didn't Beyonce do that as well? Didn't she sort of go, hey, here's my new album? And everyone's like, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. Same thing. And the other one that happened, another thing that happened as well recently, I don't know, there was a rapper over in, I think he was in the US, called Tool with a dollar sign.
Yeah, I heard about this guy.
And he released a new album, and some guy had his Google Smart Card set to let him know about any new stuff that came up from Tool. So, of course, this guy releases an album, and this guy's phone says, hey, Tool have released a new album. Cue heart attack. And then cue extreme disappointment. When he realized it wasn't,
when he realized it was a rap record.
mate, you want to see some of the stuff? Some of the stuff that was on Twitter and such about it was vile. It was absolutely vile. So anyway, it was interesting. So, what are some other bands from the Eastern European bloc that people should be listening to, or are we just going to pop a list of a whole bunch of stuff in the show notes? What do you reckon?
There's one other band that I wanted to call out as a band that I've listened to for a number of years that are particularly good.
Mm-hmm.
This particular band is from Poland as well, called Stara Rzeszka. This loosely translates to Old River in English.
Right.
And I'm going to put a link to some of their stuff in the show notes to their Bandcamp page.
Mm-hmm.
They are really good, and I highly recommend people check that out as well.
Mm. Yeah, I did listen to these guys. I saw the link in the show notes there when you popped it up, and I really liked it. It was a bit different to stuff that I'm kind of used to, but definitely cool. Definitely cool.
I'm glad you liked it. Actually, I was always a bit, you know, some of the post rock stuff. Some of it can all sound a bit sort of similar-ish.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was kind of. Yeah, I don't know about some of this. You know, maybe you wouldn't enjoy it, but you did. Mm. Excellent.
Hey, I enjoy lots of different music, so bring it on. Especially stuff in different languages is always very interesting to hear.
I suppose the only other thing we need to discuss before we get to the main event, our exclusive interview with Jim from Killer Killer's Horse, is the album that I recommended to you. The John Anderson, Reiner Stolt album, The Invention of Knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This album hit me like a southbound train.
That's a good metaphor. I like that one.
It was cool, man. I had to sit down and actually listen to it. I tried to sit and listen to it whilst I was doing some stuff at work, and I just couldn't do it. I had to actually sit down and pay attention to it. Glad I did. It was super, super cool. I'm trying to think of what would potentially have been my favorite track on it. But
can I suggest something slightly controversial with this album?
Sure.
I don't actually think of it as individual tracks. I think of it as just one song.
I was about to say the same thing.
It's just one sort of giant suite of like just the overarching thing. You can't really sort of pick it apart to individual parts. You got to listen to the whole thing 100%. All the way through from cover to cover.
100%. And this is why I found it so hard actually picking a favorite track or picking a favorite section from it or anything like that, because everything just evolves one thing into another. And you kind of need everything to understand all the other bits. And it's hard. Hey, hats off to those guys to making an album like that, because that is extremely difficult.
It's hard. I mean, John Anderson in itself needs no introduction. I mean, the stuff that he put together, you know, his solo stuff and the stuff he's done with Yes over the years has been phenomenal. And Reiner, I don't know where Reiner gets all of this, like where all this music from him comes from. He is unbelievably prolific when it comes to just recording albums, be it with the Flower Kings or with Transatlantic or Kaipo or any of his other projects that he's got going. I don't know where it comes from. He's just a constant stream of amazing music that comes from him. It's unbelievable.
It was so much more than I had actually anticipated. And as I said, I tend to listen to music while I do work and things like that. And for me to actually have to admit, no, I can't concentrate on this enough to give it justice, that's a very big thing for me to do that. So, and there's very few albums that I actually have to sit and pay attention to and actually have a listen to. So, yeah, definitely worth a listen if you haven't heard it.
Fantastic. Well, this one.
While we're on the subject of the album recommendations, I recommended a couple to you last week as well. Have you had a chance to listen to those? I know we've both been really busy this week, so.
So the first one that we've already discussed, the Sunchild record, The Message from Afar and The Illusions of Time, we have spoken about, and I really did enjoy that one. The second one, which was the Devin Townsend remix of the Pendulum song, That one I actually did enjoy.
Mm.
I've been on a bit after the beating that I copped on the internet for my slightly backwards opinions about electronic music. I have actually been trying to, okay, well, you know, let's have a listen and see what's out there. So I thought, well, this one's a decent-ish starting point for me, I suppose. And I quite liked it. I liked the way the instrumentation, and I'm not particularly familiar with the original one, with the original mix. But I really liked this one. So
the thing with Pendulum is because of the style of dance music, I suppose, that they play, I'm not a big fan of Pendulum. However, they do a killer version remix of the ABC News theme. And they opened with that when I first saw them, and it was amazing. It is incredibly good. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of them, but when I saw this one with Devin Townsend, I was just like, nah, this is cool. Because Devin being Devin, I mean, he just works on a very different level to a lot of people as well. So what he did with the song, he kind of kept it the same, but he completely changed it as well, which is, I feel, something only Devin can do.
So I suppose we've kept the good people waiting long enough, Dave.
We should discuss
your interview.
Yeah. You know what? I just want to say, because I know the guys are probably going to have a listen to this. It was an absolute honor to meet Jim. And I also spoke to a member of one of the support acts as well on the night, who we will we'll release that as either bonus content or next week. We'll release that interview at a later date. But it was an absolute honour. Jim is an absolute gentleman and a hell of a singer as well. We sort of got introduced to each other a little bit early because I was a touch early for the interview, about half an hour. So I was sitting in the Oxford Arts Factory here in Sydney, helping with a couple of things, and the promoter came over to me and had a yak and chatted about a few things, and then there were a couple of things that had to be moved around, so I sort of helped him out with a couple of things, like moving some stools and things around. And then I'm sitting on this couch, I'm sitting on a stool next to this couch, and this guy comes up and sits on this couch and starts doing vocal warm-up exercises, and he had his hoodie on, so I didn't recognize that it was actually Jim. And I was about 20 seconds away from turning to him and going, mate, what the fuck are you doing? Do you realize how irritating that sounds? before I realized who it was. Anyway, then obviously we went out the back and had a chat. Now, I've got to apologize to the good people as well. The sound quality isn't the best in this interview. We were actually sat out the back of the Oxford Arts Factory in the alley. Out the back, so there was a little bit of traffic and, you know, a little bit of planes going overhead and things like that. But definitely, here's the interview. Take a listen.
Welcome back to Sydney.
Good to be here.
It's great to be here. It's great. It's nice. Yes. You guys have been playing through Sydney. Through Australia the last little while.
Mm-hmm.
This is stop number.
This is actually stop number one. We've actually taken a little bit of time off. For the last few months, it's been sort of the longest gap from touring that we've had
pretty much in our whole career. So this is kicking off the Love Conquers All Tour tonight.
Yeah, beautiful. Mm. Yeah. So stop number one, Sydney. Mm. One of the better cities. No, I'm kidding.
From Brisbane, so there's like literally no way I can agree with you.
Yeah, you guys have this thing called nightlife. Logistically, this must have, it must take a bit to get a tour like this organized, with you guys obviously recording, writing the new album and everything like that. And then being on tour for so long, as you said, and now coming through, playing back on home soil. Mm. But your last gig, your last tour was Australia, was it not? And then you had one in Europe a little while ago. Mm.
When we got back from Europe, we did a show with 12 Foot Ninja in Melbourne. It was just sort of like a one-off thing, which was a heck of a lot of fun. And that's about it, I think, actually. I mean, my memory is full of holes, so I don't really know. But yeah, no, we toured pretty extensively through Europe through 2015. Then we had another trip last year, which was mostly festivals and support runs, playing with bands like Opeth, Pain of Salvation. That was awesome. And then coming back home is great because it's kind of, it's been really interesting to kind of watch the band's kind of, I suppose prestige is the word, I don't really like to say that, but you know, like the prestige increase, the number of people that are kind of really invested in our music has grown a great deal since In Contact was released. So we're really excited about tonight, especially because it's going to kind of, I don't know, it'll be a nice little taste of home, I guess. Mm.
And it's not bad for a band that was never really supposed to be a band, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's all a happy accident.
Yeah.
A happy accident that we've just been pushing down the hill the rest of the way, yeah.
Yeah, mm. No, it's, I think it's amazing to see how you guys have grown as musicians, and going back and having a look at your back catalogue and then actually coming through. Because I started listening to you guys, 2013, I think.
Oh, wow. Sound like River's End.
Yeah, and I never got to see you because every single time I went to see you, you were in Europe and I was at home.
Aha.
And then when I was at home, when I was in Europe, you were at home. And, yeah. You know, so this is...
we like to do that to people.
Yeah. I've got a mate of mine, the same things happen with Tesseract every single time they've been out here. But you've said previously, when you're doing, you know, a certain type of performance that requires you to be in sort of a negative headspace, as a lot of metal and, you know, prog and all that sort of stuff tends to sort of steer toward, you try to avoid it due to self-preservation. Mm. What do you mean by that? And how do you sort of avoid it? How do you...
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, like, I've struggled with mental illness for a long time. And it's kind of, it's so easy to... you know, when you're accessing that kind of emotion, particularly as a vocalist, where it's like you have to be as honest as possible, otherwise people know that you're bullshitting, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. It's like, you know when people sing the national anthem, right, and it's all like, Australians are, and you're like, yeah, you're faking it, right? You know, it's like, but like a real emotive delivery requires a real emotive something. Mm-hmm. And for me, for a long time, I was digging too deep and putting myself in almost like a method kind of way into bad experiences that I've had or tragedies that I've experienced, and that kind of not being able to climb back out of it. And that kind of risk is unhealthy for someone like me, particularly, you know, with mental illness, like ongoing struggle with mental illness. So I guess now it's not just that I try and find a way to perform in you know, that kind of sound safely for myself. It's more, I just want to avoid writing music that is like objectively, deliberately negative, or objectively, deliberately sad, more likely. Because, like, basically, before the release of Bloom, a good friend of mine died, and that was like a click moment. No, it's okay. But you know, it's some years ago now, and we still think of that now, which is great. But yeah, it's like since then, it kind of just changed the way that I was thinking about literally everything. And I had a daughter soon after, and there's like a whole bunch of changes. And so now it's just like, when I see my friends, I'm not afraid to tell them that I love them, and I kind of want to do that through music as well, I think. So if I hope that answers your question a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's really admirable as well. You know, and congratulations on the daughter.
Yeah, thanks.
As well.
She's a psychopath. So yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah.
She's three.
Right, okay. Is that a normal thing, psychopathic threes? Or,
yeah, I mean,
you know?
Like, let's find out.
Yeah. So I suppose getting back to the album itself, you've released it, obviously a very emotional album for you, and a lot of lights, shades of light and dark throughout the album, which is absolutely brilliant. What's the track that you're really looking forward to playing?
There's a couple of treats tonight and on this tour, because it's like the first and maybe only time that we're going to be playing In Contact start to finish. So there's going to be tracks that we play tonight that we may not play live again.
Yeah.
So stuff like Capulet, mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to playing. It's very soft and lyrical, and it's a song that was really close to my heart. My Hands Are the Hardest is a track that we've never played live before, mm-hmm. and Fill My Heart. Basically, yeah, just all of it. I'm looking forward to in context as well. In context. Shut up. Like in full start to finish, that kind of journey is something that I've, since we came up with the idea, I've been really looking forward to just kind of like living and breathing the thing for an hour and a bit, yeah. and just doing it. So yeah, I'm psyched for all of it, basically.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people in the room are going to be really, really psyched to do it. To hear the album in full,
because
it's pretty rare to hear a band play an album cover to cover.
I mean, like with a concept album, it's more likely to happen, I guess. But yeah, I mean, we probably never would have done it if it wasn't for the fact that it was like, you know, chapter by chapter kind of discrete stories kind of concept albums.
Yeah. I know. Speaking of the community that's sort of going to be here tonight, I mean, the prog community is, especially in Sydney, but in Australia and around the world, but particularly in Sydney, it's a very, for want to use of a better term, incestuous community.
Oh, yeah.
So you're playing with...
Is there
with,
a better term? I don't know.
I don't know. I like that term.
I like it.
And I think... is it strange to be playing with your old band member in another band?
It's the best thing ever, because it's not just Zach, right? Like, we've known the Opus guys for like since the beginning of the band, pretty much. So like the last 7 or 8 years. I mean, I know some of the guys were friends with them before, but like we've all sort of come of age musically together with all these guys, and you know, I hang out with these guys socially all the time. So it's like, it's not just sharing a stage with Zach, it's sharing a stage with all our mates. And I don't think I could be more proud of those guys for the musical growth that I've seen from them from their first to their second album. Like, the album came out today, by the way, Stray Fire. Like, we got to listen to it at the listening party, and it's fucking incredible, man. It's just like, it's such a huge step forward for them, and I'm stoked for them. I'm super proud.
Yeah.
I know that sounds a little bit patronizing, but I'm super proud.
No, but I think that's obviously something you can be of your friends as well, is proud. And I think going back to, not to harp on it, but the mental illness stuff that you were talking about earlier, and not to mitigate it either, particularly in Western society, if you say you're proud of particularly another man, if you're a guy and you're proud of another man, people look at you
really
and go,
"Oh,
you're
not allowed to be, are you?"
Exactly. Yeah. You're not allowed to show emotion and things like that. Yeah. So I think it's great that that you are proud of your friends.
We've all learned to tell each other we love each other.
That's good. I think that's really healthy, and it's good. And I mean, speaking of things being healthy and so on and so forth, you guys, as I mentioned earlier, you guys have been to Europe recently. How does it compare, sort of playing in Australia to playing over in Europe? You guys had a reasonably big tour over there from memory.
Yeah.
You pretty well hit all the traps.
Yeah, it's different in so many ways. I mean, even just sort of from the outset, the structure of a tour, the number of shows, because for a band like us, we always play major cities, right? So like Australia, there's only a handful of shows that you can do if you're doing a tour like us, and I've said this before, but it's like, because of the culture here, a show on a Wednesday isn't really gonna fly, you know what I mean? So it's like you spread it over weekends, that kind of thing, to try and get the most out of touring, because it's so expensive to cover the distances. Whereas in Europe, the culture is different, so you can put shows on night after night and just bang them one after another, and people will still come. And then, not to mention, then beyond that, the distances are so much shorter, you know? So we'll be on a nightliner, we'll be sleeping on the bus, and we have a couple of drivers that take us from show to show, which means we finish the show and they take us to the next one. We wake up and we're already in another city, because it's only 4 or 5 hours drive.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's a couple of long travels, like Portugal. I think we're going from Lisbon to Switzerland. So that's going to be quite a schlep.
That's a fair way. Yeah.
But you know, and then third, and maybe most importantly, the cultural difference in terms of the attitudes toward artists. And again, this isn't me sort of like shitting on Australian culture or whatever, but you tend to see a little bit more respect for the artists in general. Like, you can be playing a small show and you would still have the catering that is required by your performance contract, and they want to make sure that you're comfortable and stuff like that. Whereas we've had a lot of experiences in smaller Australian venues that you're not treated that well. So it's really different across the board.
And do you think, obviously a very cultural thing, you touched on it before, you just don't go out in the middle of, the culture is you just don't go out in the middle of the week. Do you think that's partly due to, for example, one thing, the cost of things here in Australia? You know, I can't remember what the tickets are worth here for the show tonight.
I
can't remember what they were worth, but generally speaking, you know, you go out to see a local band, even guys like, you know, Sucker Punch or any of those other guys, and you try not to throw your recorder on the ground. you go out to see any of those guys, and it's $60-$70 to go and see them. And that's quite a lot of money by comparison to Europe, where you can go for 15 or euros. Cheaper.
Yeah, I think this is. I think tonight is only like $30 max. If you, I can't imagine this, but if it is more than that, then I think that's silly. not that I want to downplay what we're doing. It's worth the money, I promise. But yeah, I don't know. The cultural stuff in here is really, really powerfully ingrained. Like you were talking about, you know, men not being able to express their feelings to other men, that kind of thing. Like a lot of that is tied into the way we treat weekends and the sort of binge culture and everything like that. So it's just kind of like the weekend is for partying.
Yeah.
And that's the culture here. It's less of a cultural experience to go and see music and more of an experience to go out and get smashed on the weekend kind of thing. They tie into one another. I was saying this to a friend of mine the other day, that it seems like in Australia, for the most part, and again, this isn't me poo-pooing Australia, it's just like an observation, that we tend to go to Foo Fighters gigs, and then we forget about it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like we fill stadiums and we go check out this stuff. It's very rare that we come and actually explore local artists, particularly local progressive artists or strange stuff, and that's why I'm always super grateful for the audiences that we have, because again, we write music for ourselves. You know, this is not catered to an audience. We write stuff for ourselves and people come along, and that's freaking awesome. So, yeah.
I think Mike Portnoy put it very well in a song by Dream Theater, which was never enough. Yeah. Everything is never enough.
Is that off Octavarium?
Yes. And speaking of Mike, you guys were actually mentioned by him a little while ago. What was that like?
It's freaking awesome. We met him actually in Barcelona.
Right. He would have been doing the Shattered... Yeah, Big Prog Mike Fred, so Shattered Fortress show, yeah.
Awesome to see. And obviously the guys from Haken were lovely as well. We met them. But no, he's a really, really lovely guy. Just sort of a gentle dude, really happy to chat. And the thing I love about Mike is that he invests time to listen to new artists. He doesn't have concrete tastes.
Yep.
You know, and especially for a guy who's been around for that long, he hasn't put walls around his taste, you know, so he's listening to new stuff. And so we really appreciate all the shout outs that we've had from him, because of course his audience is massive. And so it was really nice. It was really kind of sort of a bucket list moment, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I mean, it's been a long road for you guys, to get to where you are now, not as long as some, but definitely longer than others. What has it been like? So you guys, what's the main thing that has really driven you guys to keep going, to keep pushing that side project that was never supposed to be a main project?
I think just the fact that we enjoy writing the music, to be honest. Like Sam and I have always kind of said that, you know, if we stopped touring, which is a distinct possibility, it's an expensive thing. You know, if like down the track we can't keep doing it, we're not going to keep doing it. And like if we stop touring, we wouldn't stop making music. You know, it's always going to be something that we do in one form or another, whether it's, you know, whether it's Seahorse or something else, but we're always interested in writing with each other, because I think that relationship is something that we've developed for a long time and something that is really important to us.
Perfect. Yeah. And I suppose the final... There's two little final questions. One thing I do on my podcast is there's another guy, Hoggy. We actually run the Dream Theater Fan Club of Australia and New Zealand, he and I. So we do this podcast every week, the 9-8 podcast, and we recommend each other, every fortnight, and we recommend each other an album.
Right.
So I'd like you to recommend myself and the listeners an album.
Anything in particular? Like any kind
it can
of
be anything.
Progressive stuff?
It can be anything. It literally doesn't. I had Fleetwood Mac's Rumours recommended to me the other day by the guys in Genetics, actually.
I've met those guys. Yeah, they're really lovely. I'm going to sound like a broken fucking record here, but if you haven't, like if you're a prog fan and that's kind of the world that you've grown up in and you haven't really spread your wings and listened to a whole bunch of other stuff, if you haven't dissected Tori Amos's Little Earthquakes, you have not
lived.
Yes, lived, man. That album is genius, like wall to wall. It's I've never been able to listen to that album without tears, not once. There's always something that gets you. And putting in context, this thing is released in like 1992, and some of the lyrical content that she's throwing out there in terms of I suppose feminism, but it's not like ham-fisted. It's just kind of like she just has this character about her and the way that she puts forward about female sexuality and female power that isn't like literal. It's just these beautifully structured lyrics, and just she's a goddess, and I absolutely love that album. And if you haven't done it, go there a lot until you get it. If you don't get it at first, go again. Yeah. It's the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Amen, as they would say. final question.
Yes.
Tell us something we don't know.
I did ballet for 10 years.
Right.
As a kid.
There you go.
Pretty much for the age of 5 to like 15.
Yeah.
Had a lot of friends there. And got beat up a lot. Got pushed around a lot.
Yeah, I'll bet.
On account of that. Yeah. But, you know, it was a good way to hang around girls at the time. But no, it was also like a really nice creative outlet for me. And I love to dance and to move my body. And that sort of led to, you know, sports and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't dance anymore. But it was a fun time. So, yeah, you might not know that. Now you do.
Yeah, wow. Mm. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, it's been great to hang out with yourself and in this strange ski back alley.
It is a delightful alleyway. As alleyways go, I feel very safe.
Yeah, actually, you're not wrong. It's actually a safe feeling alleyway. I think that's the lack of trash.
I didn't see any syringes.
Yes.
So that's a plus. That's a plus for me.
Yeah, I didn't even need to check when I sat down, which is a lot to say for Sydney. So look, thank you, Jim.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
No problems at all. Thank you.
So it was a really interesting interview you did there, and there was a couple of things with the interview with Jim there that I wanted to mention.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
First of all, he brought up his performance at Be Prog, My Friend, which I was there for. small story there is that when they were announcing who they were, you know, we are Caligula's Horse and we're from Australia, and he said, you know, are there any Australians here? Of course, the lone Australian in the audience was me, and I went nuts in the front row. He's like, oh, great, one guy, terrific. But I have noticed, I mean, even from just being in the crowd and not necessarily being around sort of backstage or anything like that, I have noticed that, you know, the bands do tend to be treated much better in Europe than they are anywhere else. In mm-hmm. the world, I have heard Marillion sort of talk about this as well. That at least in the 80s, when they were, you know, big and sort of on top there, they were feted whenever they went to Europe. But when they went to America, it was really a grind. They were in a tour bus. Some of the gigs were it was like club gigs, and the artist wasn't necessarily treated very well, and they'd get shit opening bands that didn't really fit with their music and all that sort of stuff, where the European show seems to be a little bit more actually centered towards the artist as opposed to just pure profit.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's I mean, we've spoken about this time and time again, about, you know, how the art scene in Australia seems to be an add-on rather than an actual part of the culture, which is very much, I think, the opposite in Europe.
Absolutely.
It's
absolutely
very much part of everything you do. And you know what? Those tickets the other night were not expensive. I think from memory they were 30 or 40 bucks something like that.
Might have been
a little bit cheaper or something like that. And the Oxford Arts Factory is a great sounding room. It's really, really good. It was great. But, I mean, it was pretty well sold out, I think. And it was just great to see a room like that full. But it's very, very difficult to see that these days. It's very rare to see that these days.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I just thought it was really interesting that we were talking about that the other day. Jim and I were, I just found it really interesting that Jim mentioned that as well the other day. That, you know, that's how things are over in Europe and how much easier it is traveling and touring Europe than it is in Australia, and that's partly due to geography, sure.
You mentioned that as well. I mean, you play the show, you get on the bus, and 3 hours later you're in the next city, and it's you're there and you can play the next show.
Exactly.
And also as well, he was talking about, I mean, I talked about this last week as well with my friend Ron, who has pretty much eschewed the bigger gigs for more sort of smaller bands and local bands where tickets are only sort of €20 and you get to see more different, more interesting stuff. Mm. And Jim mentioned this, he mentioned that in the interview where it was like, here we go see the big bands, you go see the Foo Fighters or Metallica or whatever, and that's it. And nobody really goes out to see
see the local bands, which is really terrible because we have some amazing local bands here in Australia.
Yeah, we do.
And we talked about this as well with Pliny. Mm-hmm. Pliny, go, you know, in Europe, you know, certainly a hell of a lot bigger than he is here in Australia.
Yeah, and he's touring soon too, which will be one hell of a show to go to.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I just found it really interesting. I also wanted to make a particular mention as well to one question that I did ask him about how he deals with sort of the darker side of music and so on and so forth, because that is a part of, you know, particularly prog music and most heavy music, people associate it with negativity and negative feelings and all that sort of stuff. And I thought his story surrounding that was actually really, really cool. So, you know, despite the horrible situations from which it emerged, with the suicide of a close friend, which is never good.
No, not at all. And
I feel for him, I really do with that. Yeah. But I think it's great that he's actually putting as positive a spin on it that he can, and he's making sure that he's not dragged into a negative headspace due to it as well. I think that's great.
Absolutely. I know he spoke as well as about men sort of, you know, talking about, you mentioned it as well, that, you know, men sort of speaking about loving one another, and that sort of stupid, backwards, Neanderthal-like homophobic stigma that comes with that, which is just bullshit.
Yeah. And I think, I think it's great that they're doing that and that he's not afraid to say, no, I this is how we are, and I have no shame in saying any of this at all. And I think that's absolutely fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that was about all that I had in the interview. Fantastic interview, Dave. You should consider this, doing this for a living.
Yes, well, if people wanted to pay me more than what I'm currently earning, no problems.
We should also just quickly point out as well, the original plan was that I was supposed to be coming. I was going to fly over to Sydney and see that. Unfortunately, with some professional things that have been going on in my life, rosters were changed at the very last minute. And pretty much I had to work during that whole concert. So I was seeing the photos and the clips that David sent to me and just sort of, it was my turn to be jealous.
Payback's a bitch, mate.
Sure is.
I think it was, it was really eye-opening to have a chat to him and then see them. I will say as well, and I don't want to turn this into a review or anything like that of the show, but, there were a couple of people in the audience who had issues with the sound, and I was talking to them afterwards and they were saying, oh, no, there was a bit muddled and da-da-da. And there was one particular lady I was speaking to who basically said that they sounded terrible on stage, and I actually completely disagree with it. I think they sounded fantastic, but that is a very directional room and I was sort of standing pretty well right behind the sound desk. So,
okay, so if you're off to one side, maybe it sounds a bit sort of like a pig on a barrel sort of thing.
Potentially.
I've been in rooms like that. The Rosemount, I mean, I've complained mercilessly enough about the Rosemount Hotel in Perth, but it got to the stage where during anathemas, I was literally standing in front of the PA listening to the sound coming off the wedge monitors. You know.
Yeah, but no, it was a fantastic gig, and I'm really glad I got to see the whole album, the whole new album in full, including there's an absolutely fantastic spoken word piece that they do in the middle of it called Inertia and the Weapon of the Wall, which is like a spoken word poem. And it goes into the next song called The Cannon's Mouth. And they did that whole thing live as well. And hearing it live, I can, because he mentioned in the interview that there were particular songs that maybe they'll never play live again. And he brought up Inertia. He said, you know, we probably won't do Inertia live anymore. But I tell you now, that is the best intro track that I have heard in a long time. And the way they did it, that on live, was absolutely fantastic. It was really good.
I'd be interested to find out why they think they wouldn't play it live.
it's a bit
What's the thinking?
I don't know. It's a bit of a strange one because when you hear it on the album, there's a whole bunch of effects and things like that with the voice, but there's really none of that live. It's very raw.
Oh, okay. It's more maybe it's I know Marillion have talked about this. There's one particular song it's called Cannibal Surf Babe.
Yeah.
And during the tour, they spent so long trying to get that thing to sound anything like it was on the album, and it just didn't. So maybe that's the same thing. Maybe the band feel thing. That it doesn't quite, they can't get it to sound like it does on the record without a ridiculous amount of gear on stage or running it off a tape loop or something.
Exactly. And I mean, it was a fantastic album. They nailed it. The one thing that spoiled the whole night, and there was one thing that spoiled the whole night, and I sent you a message about it after I left. These guys were given a curfew, and we were told that they had a curfew of 11:30, right? They had to be off the stage at 11:30. Which meant that Caligula's Horse, because there was a slight overrun by one of the other bands, these guys had to cut two songs from their set. Now, they got the whole album done, which was great, but they were going to then play three songs afterwards as well. Now, the way they did it was really interesting. They actually put a poll out on Facebook and said, hey, which songs do you want us to play? And, of course, progheads being progheads, we chose all the long ones. So they basically said, look, we're going to be able to maybe do three instead of the five that we promised you. And they didn't announce which songs they were. They just started playing them, right? It was really, really good. Problem was they only got the chance to do two because then they had to get off the stage because they had a curfew.
Yep.
Now, what they mean by curfew was they get off the stage, the DJ decks go on the stage, and the place turns into a nightclub.
Oh, come on.
Now, the thing that really pissed me off about this was, and I actually, before I mention that, I'm going to mention one really fucking weird thing that happened at the gig. In the Oxford Arts Factory, there's two rooms. So there's a big room, which is where these guys were playing, and then there's a side room off to, the side. You come down the stairs. It's actually underground. You come down the stairs, and straight front is the main room, and if you veer off to the left, there's, a little bar with a smaller stage, and generally they've got, alt-rock kind of gigs in there and, rock and shoegazy sort of stuff. Oxford Arts, the main Oxford Arts Factory, is generally for events and big concerts and so on and so forth. Between the two rooms, though, there's a little performance space. So here's this heavy metal prog band playing, sort of stuff. And there's this Asian guy covered in flour rolling around on the floor in this performance space.
Right.
And it was the weirdest thing, partly because it kind of worked. it was just strange enough that you could go, yep, okay, that's odd. But it was strange. But the thing that really pissed me off about the evening, the reason why it ruined the evening for me and for a lot of other people, was in their last song, about halfway through their last song, all the clubbers started coming in through the doors, right? And there was a group of three girls. I reckon they would have been 20, 21 maybe. And they got to the bar and they looked over at the band with this look of disgust on their face. What are you doing here? This is we've paid for a club night. What is this shit kind of look? And that really pissed me off because I'm sorry, they should not have had a curfew to kick them off to put some wanker standing behind a DJ deck. Bear in mind, I used to be a DJ myself, right? So kind of a little more qualified than a lot of people who rage about this shit now in our community. Not trying to big note or anything like that, but I've been there, I've been on both sides of the fence, and I understand both games. But, I mean, For the audience then to turn around as well and do particular audience members who were there just so happened to be there, turn around and go and give that look and that negative vibe off, that was actually really disheartening. I found it really rude, small-minded, and it just really put a sour note on the whole night. After the gig, I was actually talking to a couple of the guys from one of the support acts as well, Opus in the Machine. And they were telling us that after 11:30, they couldn't load out through the back doors. They had to load out through the club, through the front.
Oh, fucking hell.
And this was all to do with the lockout laws. So again, the lockout laws strike.
Lockout laws strike again.
Yeah, and it's just absolutely disgusting. And again, this goes back to, you know, how artists are treated in Australia as well. So, you know, that really unfortunately ruined the night for me. I'd go and see them again, no problems at all. It's not like I wouldn't go back and see them or anything like that, but I really think again about supporting somewhere like the Oxford Arts Factory when, A, they treat artists like that, and, B, they kick people off who are playing music for essentially a cash grab for a DJ night. I just found it deplorable.
The thing is, though, and you probably, I mean, yeah, the, you know, the treatment of artists is particularly shit, but you probably find as well that it's like a licensing thing. You can only have certain shows at certain times, and after 11:30, it's got to be this kind of show, or you can't sell alcohol and you can't have the license and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, you
know,
probably.
You know what I mean? It's right, like, you know, it has to be a late night thing. Otherwise, we can't have people here after 11:30. Or because it's a dance thing, it can be a bit quieter and it's not a rock thing, so you don't run into noise curfew problems. And
yeah, because, you know, the last club that I went to, I had to take my earplugs with me because it was ear bleedingly loud.
This is why I don't do nightclubs anymore.
Well,
nightclubs are louder than, you know,
concerts.
You know,
they turn
nightclubs. They just turn the bass up way too loud. And I went to a club for a mate's birthday party, and the DJ on stage would just randomly fire off a fire extinguisher every now and then. It's like, oh, fuck off, mate.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying, everybody make some noise, and then he blasts a bloody fire extinguisher. And it's like, oh, piss off.
Yeah, I know.
Look at us, the grumpy old man again.
Rock bands too have been doing that for some time as well. I mean, Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden, the amount of times that he says in a concert, you know, let me hear you scream, or scream for me. City here, you know. But that being said, I mean, it's all a bit of hype up and all that sort of stuff. But I don't know, man. I would, if I were the guys from Seahorse and from the other two support acts on the night, I would be livid for that result. I mean, that's just disgusting, in my opinion.
Yep.
But it is what it is.
Yeah.
So, interestingly, he gave us a really interesting album to listen to, which was an album by Tori Amos. If you haven't listened to that album, people that are listening, please go and listen to it. It is a phenomenal album. And as Jim mentioned, just listen to it until you understand it. And I agree with him 150%.
I'll definitely do that. I am somewhat familiar with some of Tori Amos's work, but I don't think I've ever listened to an entire album all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
So I will definitely be doing that.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. It's phenomenal.
So speaking of album recommendations.
Yep.
What have you got for me this week, Dave? What have you got?
Can you hear that? That's me rubbing my hands together in anticipation.
Oh, boy.
So I came across these guys the other night on Spotify.
Is that the Swedish Chef version, is it? Spotify.
Put the chicken in a bit. So these guys are called Hidden Citizens. And there is an album they've got called Reawakenings. It was released in 2016. And you will see that every single track on this is pretty well a cover. And they're all called, for example, the final track on the album is Hungry Like the Wolf, Epic Trailer Version.
Okay.
So I want you to take particular note of two tracks, Take On Me and Land of Confusion.
Okay.
This is hands down the best version of the Land of Confusion I have ever heard, and by a long way. So, yeah. So there you go. Sorry, long way to say it, but Reawakenings by Hidden Citizens. What have you got for me?
So last week you mentioned how the admiration that you have for Eric Gillette.
Oh yes.
Did you know he had a solo record? He has a solo record from a couple of years ago called Afterthought. It's in 2015.
Ooh, I'm going to have to listen to that.
Yes, you are.
I'm assuming this is what you're recommending me. This isn't just like Okay, good. Yep. Yes, definitely.
This is my recommendation to you. Eric Gillette, Afterthought from 2015. And I will put a link in the show notes for you and for the listeners out there to give that one a go.
Perfect. No worries at all. I'm definitely keen to have a listen to it. I love Eric Gillette. He is a god among men. Awesome. I think that probably just brings us really neatly to our combined album review for the week. So this is not so much a brand new segment. We did tease it sort of in the very first episode. But this is, you know, sort of the first time we're doing it. We're bringing it back, I suppose you could say, for the podcast. And this week we're going to be having a quick chat about a new album by some guys, and we teased a little bit earlier in the podcast, some guys from Adelaide, which is interesting because we do a lot of bagging on Adelaide and this seems to be like something good coming out of there. So I'm a bit shocked. But this album is called Civilization by Southern Empire. Now, Hoggy, what do you think about it?
I really like this album. This is the second album from Southern Empire. Mm-hmm. And they openly name check bands like Dream Theater, Transatlantic, IQ, and Stephen Wilson as big influences on their music. And I could definitely hear their influences. Oh. They're pretty obvious. I mean, there's one section in the big half-hour epic song on the album where it's like, oh, it's like, wait, where have I heard that from? Oh, yeah, those keyboard sounds and that choral sound is definitely one straight out of the Dream Theater playbook. So I can definitely, so as a recording this morning, I put out a message on to the fan club to tell people to go and listen to this album. So I will follow that up here by saying, go and listen to this album. Mm-hmm. There are four tracks on this album. Mm-hmm. Shortest one is 9.5 minutes long, mm-hmm. and the longest one goes for half an hour.
Yep.
So we're talking like proper sort of long form progressive rock type stuff here.
Mm-hmm. I think the entire album goes for over an hour. Goes for about 1 hour and 10 or something like that. So you know, proper prog rock, as you call it. I agree with you. I really like this album, but it's really early 90s. I don't like the guitar tones. Being a guitarist, kind of a big thing. It's kind of a bit all over the place. There's some great progression in it and there's some great movements within the music, but then there are some that just seem a bit ham-fisted. Like there's almost like a fade out and then it just starts again. You know what I mean? There's a couple of moments like that. And
Dream Theater got criticized for that in the early days, that it was very sort of quote unquote cut paste. There was a lot of cut paste sort of thing going with the different sections were sort of like the jump cut sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, so this was a little,
that's why I sort of prefaced that was why I was prefacing my review of this album was to say that I can see that they've got their influences and that those influences are pretty obvious, but I really want to, you know, keep an eye on this band and have a look and see what they go and where they end up.
100%.
Because I think as most bands go, they sort of the influences become less pronounced and they sort of find more sort of, you know, quote unquote, their sound.
I agree.
So that's
why
I was name checking this band out as one to keep an eye on. Because what they're doing now is really, really good. But it'd be interesting to see how they develop that into their sound.
I think they've got almost kind of the really good bones for their own sound as it stands at the moment. But there's something, I don't know if it's the mix in the album or there's something just not quite right about it. And not in a bad way, not like it's badly mixed or anything like that. I can hear everything. Everything's there. I can, you know, I can listen to it no problems at all. But there's just something not. And there was Goliath's Moon, which was the opening track, which has got that whole same theme of finding a diamond and all that sort of stuff that we sort of saw on the Sunchild episode, the Sunchild album as well. But it was a bit, the story sort of never evolved in that song. It was just about this guy who found a diamond that was really expensive and then he lost it and then he found it again, but he couldn't afford it to buy it back, so he'll probably never see it again. And it almost says that in those exact words. I don't know. Lyrically, it didn't seem super evolved for me. But I agree with you. I think it's some pretty amazing roots. And I'm really going to look forward to what these guys have got in store over the next little while. And I'd probably go and see them live. If they toured, I'd probably go see them. You know, out of 10 rating, probably a 6, 6.5 for me.
Yeah, I was going to say I'd give it a thumbs up, but it was sort of a tentative thumbs up.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I see where they're going and I want to see where they progress to.
I agree with you on that. And I should mention as well that 5 is average for me. I don't do this whole 7 being average thing because people are afraid of being sued.
Oh, yeah. This is why I just go with thumbs up and thumbs down.
Mm-hmm.
It's either good or it's bad.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what you get. Yeah,
100%. But, yeah, no, I reckon 6, 6.5 or something for this one for me. But it's good. It's a good album. I'm not saying it's not a good album. Yeah, just things maybe need a little bit of tweaking, but I'm certain we'll get that later on. So there you have it. So I don't know. Have we got anything else to talk about this week, or is that?
I think that's done.
That's about it.
I think we've got that one. It's all there.
Perfect. 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 Well, thank you again to all the listeners for listening into us this week on the 9-8 podcast. What are we going to be talking about next week? I think we're following on, aren't we, from our themes of non-Western prog music, and we're going to be delving a little bit further along.
Yes, we are. So this week we have spoken a lot about Eastern European bands. Next week we're going to be talking about some bands from Asia.
Ooh.
So I believe you have been listening to a bunch of Japanese metal bands.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's some crazy stuff in there.
Yep, there sure is. So I have, and I have a couple that I've picked up. I've got a friend who's traveled quite a bit to India.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has turned me on to some music from India.
Ooh.
That I will be sharing with you all next week.
There's some cool stuff coming out of India at the moment, I got to admit.
There sure is.
Excellent, excellent. And next week we're also going to bring you another interview from the same night as the Caligula's Horse interview. I managed to sit down and have a chat with Zach from the band The Opus and the Machine. Who Zach actually used to be a part of Caligula's Horse, and then he bowed out and started his own thing with Opus. So that will be the interview that I'll be conducting next week, and we'll have a chat about the interview, much akin to what we did this evening. So yeah, there's that. That's going to be fun.
Absolutely.
And as always, talking about the news and all the latest events that have been going on in the world of prog and music abroad. So thank you so very much again for listening. Definitely check out the show notes, which Hoggy slaves over every week to bring you all the most accurate show notes that he humanly can. My name's David Ellis.
My name is Alex Hogg, and we'll see you all next time.
See you then.
Adios.